Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. Hey, Kirk. Good talking
to
you again.
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah. No, and I kind of surprised you when we first got on the line and then by saying, have you shoveled your driveway yet? And he said, oh, you know it's snow.
I know.
It is winter here. No.
Yeah.
Well, for you.
It's a very late snow for this area. We actually got a dusting in November, which was one of the latest we've ever had. But yeah, we got 8 inches yesterday. So it's a nice, beautiful, looks like the holidays.
Looks like Christmas. Yeah. Looks like
now, winter wonderland, as we sing.
we have some new neighbors here, and he was spent a year in Chile, and which is like the equivalent latitude, but south versus where mm-hmm. we are in San Francisco area. And he's mm-hmm. like, I asked him, what was the weirdest thing about living, you know, in another country for a year? And he said, well, Christmas on the beach when it's 80 degrees is kind of not what I was looking, you know, expecting. Yeah, it doesn't look right putting a, you know, Santa hat right. on with a fur coat on and on the beach. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Most of Christmas is oriented toward the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, that's all commercial stuff and that's right, happening. Right. But, I have to look to see when this episode will come out. It might be right around Christmas time. Yeah. But the idea, for today's topic was I ran into a conversation and they were really focused on, you know, the end of life and long-term, you know, flexing this cable bazillion times and everything else. And I says, mm-hmm. well, what are the things you're seeing in, mm-hmm. in your prototypes and your early assembly of your systems? And I says, well, the connectors are pulling out. I says, well, is that due to wear? And they go, no, we don't really know, but we, you know, when you first assemble something, it doesn't start. It doesn't get going. And they're like, could it be an assembly issue or a design issue that it makes it difficult to assemble? And so we dove into that and they're like, but as reliability people, we're only focused on the long-term stuff. And I says, well, you know, customers really don't like it when it doesn't work. They don't care if you say it's going to work for 20 years, if it doesn't work for 20 minutes, they are not happy with that. And so you can't ignore the things that happen early on in the life of your product.
Yeah.
You can't just ignore it.
Just think of your own personal experiences, taking something out of a box, using it for a little bit, and then it fails.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even worse than, you know, it operated for several years and then failed. It just definitely has a bigger impact on most people and most situations where you've been relying on this thing to come in to do a job like, oh, let's say a nail gun. Yeah. And, you know, you get starting to build the house and suddenly it jams and you it's broken and you go, wow.
You're out
of a nail gun. It stops a lot of things.
Well, it slows it down. That's for sure.
It slows it down. So, but the initial, that is even more critical than the wear out that'll happen later if it comes, if something isn't become more, the reason most in my view is the most common reason things are no longer used is they're technologically obsolete or something better that has better
now
features,
we get an
better
that
capabilities.
Faster,
you know? Yeah, faster, or more automatic, or something like that. But the fact is that the most irritating period for and the most expensive for a company is that first part because it's usually covered under warranty, depending on how long the warranty is. And also,
customer feedback. I call it
customer
the Yelp,
feedback. You go to Yelp or Google reviews and you're going to let them have it. And, you know, it's don't buy this product. And fortunately, you know, Amazon and others use verified kind of, you know, they try and filter out the false feedback, but anyway, it's going to impact your reputation of everything else.
Yeah. The issue, though, was, and I think you and I and everybody that's listening to this understand that if it fails early, auto box type failures or early life failures, or
yeah,
just don't use infant mortality when you're working on a neonatal medical system. They just don't like that phraseology. No. It's not a good sell.
Not at all.
No,
but no. And it's false. It's really, to me, that, you know, it's kind of putting a false equivalence, the fact that, yeah, babies, you know, the whole bathtub curve was based on the actuarial tables.
Let's not get into that, because we could talk about that forever, and
Okay.
All right. But the idea is that the issue I ran into, and it wasn't a question from them, but it was more, we were focused on the long term stuff. We may need to make sure it works for, you know, 10 years. And like, if it doesn't work for 20 minutes, it's never going to make it to 10 years, right? It's failed.
You repair it, we're going to.
Right. But then the discussion, they were like, well, that's a quality issue or that's a manufacturing issue. I says, you're the reliability engineer. If it costs this organization money because it's not working, it doesn't matter whose department it is, but you can fix that by design, right? Or by paying attention to how you are going to assemble this thing. If you put in a bunch of cables that you cannot see and they give you no audible or physical connection that it's actually mated, it's almost impossible to make that cable work. And I ran into one where they had to use a little mirror from a dentist office, and those little mirrors they look around in your teeth with.
Right.
They stuck that way down in the bottom of this box, and then they had to, only like some operators, some of the technicians had a small enough hand to put this final cable in. Right. And the connector had no clips. It had no way other than visually to tell if it was seated correctly. And only a handful of people actually got it right. And no pun intended by that, but there was this, some people would do it well. And if that tech wasn't there that day, then it was a 50-50 shot that it would be installed correctly. That's a design issue.
Right. We have a whole new department to blame and point our fingers at. That's the design for manufacturability. Okay.
Well, so everything's a design.
Well,
everything's a design problem, Kirk. You know, if it fails, it's a design problem.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay.
I was a manufacturing engineer to start, so I know every failure that ever occurs is a design
failure. Yeah. Even if the guy adjusts the reflow machine for the wrong temperature profile for the solder. Yep.
Yep.
That was a design. That's a design flaw right there.
Not taking care of manufacturing variability. I tell you, it's part of the deal.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
If you're using solder that only works at particular
any very robust, you know it. Any robust design that's very reliable can become easily, very quickly, a very unreliable design.
Oh, yeah.
If the manufacturing falls apart, if they...
Oh, yeah. If this vendor falls apart, if any of the other things...
Don't
like
buy
that.
Anything on, you know, manufactured on variety.
Well, cars, especially. Yeah. But the idea is that the reliability engineer was under this charter of only dealing with long-term stuff. But I said, well, who's taking care of the short-term stuff? It's like, nobody.
Quality.
Until it's a problem.
Well,
quality says if it's, once it gets out of manufacturing, it's done. It passed manufacturing. And it says, are you checking the mating of this cable that you can't see? No, we can't. We can't see it. But if it has enough electrical contact that it turns on once, it's fine. But then we drop it in the box, and they did some out-of-box testing. You know, they package it all up and drive it around the parking lot, and they open it up, and it didn't work. Now they said that's a reliability problem, so they bounce it back to the reliability team, who didn't want to deal with it, saying that's a manufacturing quality issue.
Right. There's a lot of finger-pointing, always.
Yeah, and like, no, solve the problem, you know?
Well, yeah, that would, you know, a lot of it is about silos in companies, and, you know, who's to blame, where the money is, whose department. I mean, I've seen all these quality departments, and all they did was do SPC charts and things like that. And I, you know, and it's just like the reliability departments that I've been in. I said,
they do a bunch of wibble and predictions and nothing
else. Why aren't we looking at what comes back to the field? Why aren't why aren't we going down to the repair stations and asking the guys that open these chassis and look at them and say, you know, this was unplugged or this was broken or something. And we can actually identify what are the actual mechanisms that cause these things to fail. And that's what we have to address. But
I want to get the design right. And in this product that I was talking to this team on wasn't in production yet at all. They were making some prototypes and finding these issues.
Right.
But design for reliability leans towards doing it for the long term. Yet I know, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about it, is Halt is an excellent tool to find loose cables or screws that back out or, you know, things that have enough moment they break wires or vias that break. And a lot of the very early system stuff, it's really a good tool for doing it. Oh, we can't afford that. What do you mean you can't afford that? You can afford half your products not working?
Well, you know, I'm really worried that my screw is going to back out of my VHS tape recorder. And,
it's only been 35 years.
You know, I mean, well, what was it designed for? I mean, it's okay. And we've got these nine Blu-ray DVD players that are also, let's worry about the 10-year life.
of the lasers on them, of the LEDs and lasers are used.
It's just so, but people don't really, well, people, come on, there's got to be a better recognition that technological obsolescence comes very, very fast now. It just comes, it's increased the time of, you know, and of course, Apple and some of the manufacturers will like be shorter because they try to sell more.
You want to sell more. But, you know, Kirk, the real question to you is how do you, I'm not going to wait until we get field failures to go figure out what's failing Autobox. We can. And this team, what got me was this team was seeing things that were failing prematurely from their point of view and then not doing anything about it. But more importantly is that when we got down to, you know, what are you doing for reliability? What is this? Well, we do FMEAs, we do this, we do that. And it was all really slanted towards the long term.
All elephant dances to me.
Well, I know. Let's not go there. But the idea is what should they be doing to catch these problems that are design, manufacturing, vendor, that lead to these out of box or early failures?
What should they be doing? If they have them coming back from the field,
it's not in the field yet. It's not in the field.
Okay.
It's not
in then the field. Then they ought to evaluate how they can mitigate, make that connection better. And in my experience, it doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't. I agree with that, but that's the one that they have in front of them.
Right.
What can they do to not have cable problems in general before they have problems with prototypes? You know that building a prototype is expensive and it has many uses if it's working in the design process.
Right. But, and once it's evaluated through the design process and everybody has a chance to look at it and it's still working, you're leaving money on the table if you don't take it and put it in a chamber and try and do some stress testing on it to find out where the boundaries
are. Yes. Is Halt the right tool to find early life failures?
Yes.
Why is that so hard to get you to admit that?
Let's see. I wrote a book about any kind, because I don't want to be just about Halt. I want to look at the whole picture. I want to,
what else can
the
we
holistic,
do? Besides,
the holistic thing. Okay.
What can we do
first of all,
we have
good
prototypes?
Design. Follow good design rules. Okay.
Right.
You know that
don't
there's
make
some margin.
Connectors. Yeah.
Right. Just like I think you and Carl talked about the PSI testing to 5,000 PSI, and at 5,001, it broke. You know. So the idea that you've got to have some safety margin around everything, and every component does. We don't know how much because the manufacturer never discloses that beyond its rated spec. But they have very different ones between manufacturers. Yeah. So those as margin, those are, definitely when you have a higher, it's again, comparing the stress limits through a highly accelerated limit test.
They've changed the name.
But it's also a Halt. Yes, I'm sorry. Greg was wrong about that. And yeah, I talked to him many times about years.
About
I talked to him all the time and argued with him about it. Yeah. But the limits. Those are the things that you can compare. You always find something in halt. You always find a limit. Okay, yeah. Maybe that's just a struct limit and it's well beyond the technological fundamentals of technology. Yeah, you learn something. But you also learn how robust a product can be, how strong it can be.
Yeah.
And that's what amazes most engineers is when they put in things and go well beyond their spec. Like, wow, I've had so many sit there and go, I didn't think it would do that.
It shouldn't be working.
Right. Well, come on, guys. This is what you have that you don't know about, that you're not using, and you're leaving money on the table if you leave a product that you haven't found the boundaries of its operation under stress conditions. And that's not just vibration and thermal. Yeah. It's voltage. It's frequency, cycling. Bus clock. It's thermal cycling if you want. I think that, you know, that's... There are some things that show up, especially in high-speed digital electronics, and I wrote a paper about that. It's available on ResearchGate about high-speed and thermal shifts that you can do because you can produce a high level of thermal gradients across the board, causing variations in the speed of the components and the transmission or conductance mobility, carrier mobility, and things like that. So, you know, it's been documented. We know that as you heat things up, it slows the signal down. If you cool things down, it can speed up the signal. And that shift is going to occur in lot-to-lot variations of component and even more between manufacturers if the same rated component. So
the idea, though, is that, you know, but you need a prototype. Now, good design is, you're talking about margin and those kind of things, and don't design at the limits, you know, at the theoretical limits, and then go and then check it, you know,
check the distribution of that boundary too, and see that it's not very wide, that you've got a consistency between samples, and you only need five or six.
That sounds like SPC to me.
Statistical
process control. If you have enough samples.
I'm slipping into statistics.
I know. I'm going to get you one way or the other. But the idea is that it's common. Oftentimes, it's very good common sense design practices. Yet, part of the issue was this reliability engineer I was talking to is like, I only get the protos at the end of the system. So I'm setting up all these long-term tests because that's what they seem to be. That's what I'm interested in. And like, you're ignoring the ones that are really going to cost you money right up front here. So your plan, your approach to supporting this team and this design group and this new product really has to include software failures. Well, I don't know anything about software. Well, your customer doesn't care if it's a software bug or a screw backs out and it fails. That's on your charter. You got to figure it out. And if it fails early or not, if quality isn't doing anything about it, you can help them figure out that they need to do something about it. And it goes back to that. It takes a set of different tools and approaches to minimize those out of box failures. And it is a reliability problem, in my opinion.
It is absolutely a reliability problem. And it's, you know, the only reason that some companies don't consider that is maybe because they're very siloed and, you know, they have a quality department and a reliability department. And there's a gap, a huge gap between that whole
the first design. 6 months of your product. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we all know about DFX. Okay. Designed for manufacturability, designed for testability, designed for
sustainability, environmentability, assemblability, ill-abilities.
Yes, X is a big bunch.
It's a long
list of stuff. Yeah, so those are the good ways to, you know, that definitely follow the design rules. I'm not, as you know, a big fan of derating, but when you get into a halt chamber and you find a component that is very weak in that's where you can pick up or upgrade or actually put in a higher rated component. Okay,
increase the margin.
Right. So that's the way I'd look at it all. But it's everything halt again and the evaluation your schedule on a building, what you what subsystems you have or subcomponents you're buying from a vendor, what you can do to test those before the full assembly. There's just all kinds of strategies, and Halt is so specifically adaptive to the product and what you're doing. I mean, there's some general things about computers that I would do the same as I did with all the Dell computers we tested. But in general, you really have to look at mechanical systems is very different from electronic circuit board PCBAs. They just have a different life and expectancy and mechanisms that cause it.
Set of stresses and activities. To force it to see where the limits are. You know.
Right. Right. So anyway, it's
there are things we can do.
Any failure coming to the customer is a reliability issue.
Right, and it's part of the overall charter. And it goes back to my very early in my career as a manufacturing engineer that, you know, if you would have designed this product so I could put all the components in this bag, shake it up, and it would be assembled and work forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to make the point is that the only thing manufacturing can do is make it worse. So if I start with a bad design, I can't make it better. In manufacturing, I can only make it worse because I'm going to add variability. The torque on these are going to be different. The material dimensions will be different. It will not be designed perfect.
I'm not sure that would be true with software reliability, but and software reliability is a little different in the fact that you can usually do it after the hardware has been built in most cases.
Well, not with AI, you don't have to worry about it. You can vibe by it. You can vibe program and say, hey, just make my software perfect, and then it'll just go do it. Right. It'll be fine.
Well, yeah, it is putting a lot of coders out of business. So,
yeah, there's that. Until we need experienced ones and they all retired, then we'll be back to another problem. But that's a subject for another whole episode. But anyway, it's early life failures or auto box failures, however you define that, is as a reliability professional or even a quality professional or a design engineer of any kind,
right?
Please don't ignore those. It's not somebody else's job. It's
your customer's not going to ignore them.
Yeah, that's right. They'll send it back to you.
Yeah. And
it's much, much easier to do that early in the design than it is after you've ramped up manufacturing. And it's just think about it is that one of the best and earliest things we can do is make sure that the products work out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do that. And we being anybody that cares about the product's performance over time,
right?
I don't care what silo you're in.
Right.
Don't ignore those failures in your prototypes that are just shouting at you. Hey, I'm going to fail early. Those are problems. You got to deal with those.
And go ahead, especially during the initial manufacturing phase, to do some kind of stress screening of some sort, you know, or testing, and find out what those early life failures are going to be from your, you know, your manufacturing learning curves. Basically,
yeah, it's much better to find it.
Ramp up production,
customers.
Right? It's going to get worse if you find one or two out of the first 10. You're going to find,
20% of the first 1,000.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. Hey, you're thinking like a statistician now. I guess you're getting there, Kirk. Yeah. So if you got questions for Kirk about statistics, this would be a great way to get all of us. And let's fire them up. But
please.
Yeah. I'm more interested in listeners is, how do you deal with the stuff that fails early, the out of box type stuff, and how do you prevent it?
I think besides screaming at the company.
Yeah. Besides yelling at them and whatever, and sending it back. But the idea is that part of your role? Or are you only focused on the long-term stuff and who's taking care of, or how are you dealing with the out of box type failures that you need to avoid?
Yeah. Is it a quality problem or a reliability problem?
You just can't assume it's going to not happen. That's not a realistic approach. But let us know. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this. And this was out of a conversation I had with an engineer a couple weeks ago. And yet I'm sure there's more questions about early life or out of box type failures and what do you do about them. But let us know. There's always something interesting in those kinds of discussions. So You can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us there. Kirk and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. And we really do look forward to hearing from you and what's on your mind and how can we help you get, you know, past this particular question or dilemma or problem. And
right.
Then we can talk about it and have fun with it too.
Just like field returns, we get a lot of information, feedback from the field, even criticisms. You can do that.
Yeah.
Negative feedback's probably the best. We love hearing positive. But,
I was kind of just doing a general search for other reliability engineering type podcasts and stuff. And I ran into some group or company I had never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And I'm drawing a complete blank to it. I should bring it down here. We were on their top 10 list of reliability related, podcasts, speaking of reliability ones. And wow. They wrote up a really nice little thing saying, this is kind of the stall. It was, I think the word was stalwart, you know, must listen. It's the go-to one for a decade now. You believe that, Kirk? We've been doing this for 10 years.
Yes.
And
I did the first. We did the first.
With over 1,000.
Yeah,
over 1,000 episodes.
1,000 episodes.
And very consistently coming out twice a week. And
and you've got a variety of viewpoints too. So I think
and they said it's practical. It's, you know, it's real world stuff. It's not theoretical. It's not pushing a particular product or solution where it's, and I thought, I'm going to put that in the newsletter on Sunday.
Okay.
Give them a shout out for that.
Yeah. Toot your own horn.
Egg. But it's okay. You know, somebody else appreciated it. I had no idea. I just ran across it.
No, we're. I'm glad to hear that. That's great news. So
it's good stuff.
Anyway, we'll do it again.
Talk to you soon, Kirk.
Okay. Talk to you later, Fred.
Yeah, cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.